just our van to offer an introduction to Rabbi Moshe Benovitz on this campus and this base medrash, I think would be superfluous and unnecessary. You look up and down Amsterdam Avenue, you see how many individuals have been impacted very profoundly over the last many years of Rabbi Benovitz's involvement in the chinuch of our community. The number of Bnei Torah who have emerged from his direct tutelage, and also the many programs, specifically in Tzitzis Kollel, above all, that he's responsible for under his guidance and direction, not to mention countless mechanchim who have blossomed and have developed under his encouragement and guidance as well. We're really, as a yeshiva and as a community, we have a great deal of hakaras hatov to Rabbi Benovitz. And I'll add, in lieu of the introduction, on a personal level, I can certainly add my name to the list of those I mentioned before. And I want to offer my own thanks, again, personally, but for so many of the people here in this room, in yeshiva, and throughout the community. We want to thank you, Rabbi Benovitz, for joining us tonight.
Shos the Rabbeim, the Rosh Yeshiva, a young man, he finds himself, a yeshiva bacher, finds himself traveling by train in Europe. He gets to the station, he's a little bit out of sorts and confused. He looks for a familiar face. Sure enough, elsewhere on the platform, he identifies another fellow Jew, rushes over to him and begins to try to make a connection, maybe an introduction to some Jewish geography. And he figures he'll start with a softball, a simple question, just to kind of strike up some type of conversation, relationship. He asks him if he has the time. What time is it? The older Jew looks him up and down and turns away, just ignores him completely. Maybe he didn't hear him, so he tries again. Do you have the time? Can you tell me what time it is? And he gets ignored again. They board the train. They spend some time. Halfway through the ride, he asks him again, do you know what time it is? And he's ignored completely. When the ride ends, finally, the young man, he's exasperated, and he says, listen, the ride's over, there'll be no conversation, we won't get to know each other. But I asked you a simple question three times, I asked you for the time, you couldn't respond and you couldn't give me an answer. What was going on? So the old man said, listen, I too was looking around the train station trying to figure out who's who, and I identified you right away as a fellow Jew. And I thought to myself, what was going to happen as the conversation went on, as we got to know each other? Surely we'd spend a lovely train ride playing a little bit of Jewish geography, figuring out about each other's backgrounds, talking a little bit and learning. At a certain point, I would ask you your age, and I can tell by looking at you that you're of a certain age, perhaps marriageable age. You'd ask me about my family, you'd find out that I have a daughter. We would think to ourselves together, almost at the same time, the light bulb would go off. Shidduchim have happened in stranger ways. You'd make an inquiry. Maybe I'd invite you to my town. You'd spend some time. Somebody would make the shidduch. We would get together. You'd end up going out with my daughter. You would get to know her a little bit. And I could tell from looking at you, it's the type of thing that might actually go the distance. There would be a shidduch. There would be a wedding. All those things would be wonderful. And then I stopped and I asked myself, do I really want my daughter marrying a guy who can't own a watch? Can I really want my daughter having such a person? So I ignored you completely, and I said, you know what? This isn't going to go anywhere, and this isn't what we are looking for at all. We're at the time of year where we are trained by the Bali Musar. We are trained by Chazal to live simultaneously in a variety of different time periods, to have in mind the things that are going to unfold, to be able to envision where we are going, and of course to think back to the places we have been and the things we have done. The entire process of tshuva spans past, present, and future in a very, very real way. From the Rambam's, of course, famous definition of tshuva involving the charata and the aziva sachet, the kabbalah al ha'asid, to the heavy emphasis on zichronos and the memories of the past, and of course, all of the plans for the future that are included in shofros and in malchios, and in the entire process of planning for a better tomorrow for ourselves, there's a necessity to see beyond where we are and to envision what can be. And I want to focus for a moment on some of the specific ways in which we can envision, in which we can contemplate different time periods of our own lives, perhaps in ways that we do not always naturally do so, and also to discuss some of the pitfalls and dangers of when we think in such terms, when we think outside of the time frame in which we find ourselves, too far in the past or too ahead in the future. It is famously commented by Rav Kook and by others that when we do a cheshbon nefesh, when we are introspective about where we've been and what we've done, we can never limit that to only the chatayim that we have done, to only the mistakes that we have made. There are those who compose, including Rav Kook, a special version of the Ashamnu of the Vidui, in which we list the positive things we have done. We read just a few days ago about Vidui Maser. We read about the fact that Vidui and the types of acknowledgments extends in the Torah not only to chatayim and sins, but to the positive acts, to mitzvos, and that there needs to be a full accounting of our strengths as well as our weaknesses. In a very similar and even more specific way, one of the elements of Zichronos, one of the elements of our past that we must always keep in mind, and specifically during the time period of tshuva, are the memories in the Zichronos that are encapsulated in the words of the Navi, Zacharti lach, ko amar Hashem, Zacharti lach, chesed ni'urayich. That there was a time, and that there was a period in our lives where maybe our behaviors were not as sophisticated, as fully formed as they are today. Maybe we understood a little bit less about the world around us. But there was a purity and an ambition and a sense of purpose that we find elusive in our current states. One of the more difficult brachos that we have in Shemona Esrei. There are a number of brachos in Shemona Esrei that any of us would predict or even dare to compose ourselves if we were inventing or making up our own tefillah. Other brachos in Shemona Esrei are much harder to understand what their focus is on, what they are speaking about, and why we are praying for them in the first place. Perhaps the most idiosyncratic of the brachos of Shemona Esrei is the bracha of Hashiva Shoftenu Kivarishona. There are no fewer than a half dozen pointed out by many, many of the Mefarshim and many of the Bali Halacha point out all of the ways in which that bracha is unique in Shemona Esrei. First of all, its theme is not clear at all. We speak about Hashiva Shoftenu Kivarishona. We speak about something having to do with judges from an earlier time. We speak as well about Haser Mimenu Yagon V'Anacha, a state of bliss and happiness that we hope to be able to enjoy and to be a part of. We know that the Chasima of the Bracha, which is most troublesome to many of the Mefarshim, the Chasima of the Bracha includes the word Melech, unlike all of the other Brachos, not just a Melech, but a Melech Ohev. There's something very special and something very different that's going on in the Bracha, and it's hard to figure out exactly what that something is. And there seemed to be, again, a confusion of ideas and an emphasis on points that we don't even know what it is that we're emphasizing 100%. In the tradition of the Chassidus of Majitz, they have a fascinating explanation of this bracha. We know from Parshas HaShavua a few weeks ago that the concept of shoftim is not only used in the establishment of a society with clear lines and boundaries, not only used in the types of officers and leaders that we require to be able to build the types of community and society that we desire, but there is something that relates to the cheshbon hanefesh of Elul. There's something that relates to the self-policing that every individual has. Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha b'chol sha'arecha. That a person must appoint for himself certain guards, certain leaders, certain sense of purpose and self and self-definition. Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha. And in the same sense as the Majitzer Rebbe, there is an allusion to that in Hashiva Shoftenu Kivarishona. There is a point in all of our lives, perhaps multiple points in our lives, where our ambitions are clear, when our desires are pure, when in a state of innocence we can aspire and imagine for ourselves certain commitments, certain destinations, a certain approach to life. And the reality of life so often intrudes on those pure ambitions and on those pure goals. A person becomes, even in the most holiest of environments, a person can develop a sense of cynicism, an enemy of tshuva. A person could become jaded and guarded against the type of aspirational thought, the types of dreams that define the true Baal tshuva. This is no longer realistic. This is no longer desirable. This is no longer me. These are things I cannot do. And I remember in my distant past a time where I judged myself differently. I can remember in the distant past a time where I imagined for myself something more. Hashiva shofteinu kivarishona. The initial, what's even being referred to in the bracha, what was the state of greatness for the judges? It doesn't refer to the time of the Sanhedrin, or at least not only to that time. It doesn't refer to a time where there was certain leadership that we might not have today in the absence of elements of the Mesorah and Smicha and the like. But Hashiva Shofteinu Kavarishona in the simplest sense means Hashiva Shofteinu, my own judges, our own sense of what we are to be. Yo'atzenu kivatchila. Let those who give us advice and guidance, let our own sense of where we are headed be kivatchila. Like that initial sense of purity and purity of purpose that defined our very existence. Let us reimagine the way we once did, all that was possible for us before we became cynical and before we became jaded. Haser mimenu yagon v'anacha is the weightiness of the cynicism that defines so much of our society. The weightiness that brings us down from the pressures and from the life experiences, from the failures and the redundancy of certain efforts. Take that away. V'yo'atzenu kivatchila, shofteinu kivarishona. Let it be again in that ambitious sense. In a few weeks on Yom Kippur and Mincha, we will read in ways that are not obvious at all why. We will read the incredible story of Yonah that we are all familiar with. And the questions in the story of Yonah leap off the page. What about Yonah and what about the fish? What are the metaphors and what are the ideas? One of the most basic questions asked by so many regarding the story of Yonah is the question of the people of Nineveh. Who were the people of Nineveh? What is their role in the story? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Yonah the mission to go to Nineveh? Why does Yonah reject that mission as well? But why Nineveh? What is so special about Nineveh? Who are these people in Nineveh? There are so many Umos Olam that we read about throughout Tanakh, so many people we're familiar with, and certainly, certainly, certainly above all, so many destinations that the Navi could have been sent to within our own community, within our own Am. Why is Nineveh introduced to the story at all? And there are a number of explanations that are given, some revolving around the fact that kal v'chomer, if Nineveh can do it, then anybody can. Or if Nineveh does it, how could we not be motivated to follow suit? Different types of relationships that exist between Nineveh and Am Yisrael. At the Shabbos table of my dear friend and colleague on NCSY Kol, Rav Natana Leibowitz, he once made an observation that sometimes we can look a little bit too far and a little bit too deeply. Nineveh is not an anonymous city. Nineveh is not a mystery. Nineveh shows up, if we're patient, a few weeks after we read Sefer Yonah. We will read of the original Nineveh, and the original Nineveh gives us all the answers and insight we need to Sefer Yonah and Nineveh's role in that narrative. The city of Nineveh is described, as I'm sure most are familiar with, at the end of Parshas Noach. In the lineages of the generations between Noach and Abraham, we're introduced to a most unsavory character by the name of Nimrod. After we are introduced to Nimrod, we are told that not everybody was thrilled with Nimrod. From his empire, from the Nimrod universe, the pasuk tells us, "Mina aretz ahi yotza Ashur vayiven es Nineveh." Ashur, no hero himself, but Ashur emerges from the land. He emerges from the empire of Nimrod, and he builds a number of cities, including the city of Nineveh. Rashi comments, and there are not an abundance of Rashis at the end of the parsha, so the Rashi always sticks out. Rashi inserts in here a little bit more information into the story. Rashi comments, Kevon shera Ashur es banav shomim l'Nimrod, umardim b'makom livnos ha-migdal, yatza mitocham. What was Nineveh? Nineveh was the place of a havamina towards greater kedusha. Nineveh was chesed nirayich for all of humanity. Nineveh was a place in which there was an imagination, where there was a desire, where there was a she'ifa for something greater. Before the world was set, before the rules, quote-unquote, were established, before anybody or anything was told what they could do or what they couldn't do, min ha'aretz ahu yatsa ashur, something emerged from that place of being stuck, something emerged from a place of cynicism, something emerged from a place where there was nowhere to go, and said there is, and there is more, and there can be better. And that is the type of place that is most ripe. That is the type of place which is the destination for the truest, most significant, most effective process of tshuva that can be. Zocharti lo chesed nirayich, the zichronos that we play back and forth between the Ribono Shalom and ourselves, the zichronos have to be not just of every chet we've done over the past year. The zichronos are not supposed to be even limited to every mitzvah we've done over the past year. But we are supposed to remember the times of the year and the times of our life in which we thought differently, in which we imagined differently, in which the goals were not unrealistic, where the goals were attainable, and we thought this is the year, and this is the time, and this is the place where things are going to be better. The chevra sitting in the Beis Medrash right now have a perspective on this that perhaps is slightly different than mine. For me, this Beis Medrash and the one down the block that I had discussed in learning in for so long is that chesed nirayich. It's that min ha'aretz ahu yatsa ashur. It's the place where I separated myself from the things that drag us down in the world and dreamed of the things that could be. Did I live up to all of those aspirations? I did not. But do I dare forget them in my process of tshuva? This is the place of ultimate chizuk for me personally, because it is the chesed nirayich. It is a memory of the time where we aspired, a memory of the time where we shook off experience, which is such a wonderful word in so many different areas, but sometimes can bring us down. We shook off experience, and we shook off reality, and we shook off all of these things that of course have their place, but can create a sense of hard exterior, a sense of jadedness, and certainly a sense of cynicism that brings us down. And to imagine ourselves in a place which is chesed nirayich, while at the same time thinking back to experiences we had when we were a little bit younger, perhaps in a different yeshiva, perhaps in a different place, perhaps the very day, even a couple of weeks ago, how much has changed in a week about goals that we set for ourselves, about things that we imagined for ourselves. There are those who explain that the entire institution, which is so central to the tshuva avoda of this time period, the entire institution of Kol Nidre is based on a similar philosophy. The Nidarim and the central role that the Nedarim place in Yom Kippur, in Aseret Yemei Teshuva, the Hataras Nedarim as well, is all an expression of that same idea. It's unfulfilled promises that we return to, that we think about again, that we put ourselves back in the shoes where anything and everything was possible and attainable. And we ask ourselves, how do we recalibrate and put ourselves back in that direction in such a similar way? And there is a danger in this process as well. A person can become so enamored and so focused on the events of the past, on the personalities of the past, on who we were and what we once thought, that can actually lead to a sense of paralysis in the present. The nostalgia can become an example of one of the great, great pitfalls that we have in the world of tshuva. And that is to imagine and to know that tshuva is possible, tshuva is a gift, tshuva is wonderful, but tshuva is not for me right here and right now. There was a time in my life, there will be a time in my life, there are people in the world who can use tshuva, who can apply for tshuva, who can achieve tshuva shlema, but that person is not me. That time is not now. That place is not here. I am simply too busy. I am simply too distracted. I am simply too jaded to achieve that level of tshuva. It needs to be in a completely different context. But there is always a tshuva of the immediate. There is always a step to be made. And here is where the focus must be on zichronos, on the things of the past, but in a way that leads us to a change in attitude and perspective that is squarely focused on the present and on the future. It is not enough to believe in a tshuva of someone else. It is not enough to believe in a tshuva of some time else. And it is not enough to believe in a tshuva of somewhere else. If I was in a different place and of a different mindset, I could do tshuva. That is not the way of the true Baal tshuva. That is not the way to success during this most auspicious and this most wonderful of times. In the famous story of Elisha HaNavi, the Haftorah of Parshas Vayera, the story of Elisha and the destitute widow who says she has nothing and she appeals to Elisha for help. So many of the Mefarshim, so many of the Rishonim, so many of the Bali Musar point to different aspects of that story, al derech avoda, as a way to glean certain insights, how to change a person's situation and reality from one of despair to one of success and good fortune. And one of the most subtle insights into that episode is revealed by the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya makes the most delicate of observations. It's not about a wrong word. It's not about a mistaken pasuk. It's just about something that is not said in the pasuk. Instead, the woman comes to Elisha and she says, I have nothing. And she says, they're going to take away my children. And she says, my situation is totally and completely desperate. And Elisha says to her, what do you have in the house? Listen, says the Baal HaTanya, to what Elisha asks her. He could have and should have asked her the question of, do you have anything in the house? How desperate situation is there over here? But he does not. He makes an assumption. That assumption is the key to the tshuva that is in front of us. The tshuva of the present and the tshuva of right now. An assumption that we must make before opening our mouths for a single paragraph of slichos. Before entering into the days immediately preceding Rosh Hashanah. We must share with the assumption that Elisha HaNavi makes. Elisha says, I don't know you and I don't know what's in your house. But there is something there that is the key to your salvation. There is something there that is the key to your geula. There is no metzias, there is no reality whereby you have nothing. Let's look in the cupboard. Let's look in the closet. Let's see what's in the house, and then we will make a plan. Tell me what you have, because I know you have something. Tell me what the move is, because I know there is a move. I don't care where you've been. I don't care what you've done. I don't care how frustrating, how miserable a situation you may perceive as your own. But there is a move to be made right now. So tell me what it is you have, because, says the Baal HaTanya, I know you have something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what form the Yeshua will take. I don't know how the tshuva will manifest itself. But I know that you have something. We take stock sometimes of our current situations and say, it's checkmate. We are locked into the reality that we are in right now. There is no better move. That person of the Zichronos, I am nostalgic for the way I once thought that I had a move. The way that I once thought that I had a possibility. But I don't believe that right now. And I don't have it. I don't have a move. And Elisha HaNavi says, of course there's a move. Tell me what you have. Tell me your opportunities. Show me your schedule. Show me your chaverim. Show me your environment. Let's open up the closet. Let's see what's there. Let's take it and make a plan. And we will find Yeshua. We will find the tshuva shelema. And of course, later on in the Mesorah of Chabad Chasidus, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the story is recorded that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was once having a conversation shortly or immediately after the Yom Kippur War in 1973. The conversation was with his guest in Brooklyn, was Rav Yisrael Lau, the former and at the time the future chief rabbi of Israel. No stranger, of course, to horrors and defeats for the Jewish people. But this was an incredibly despondent time. We sometimes think, those of us of a younger generation who didn't live through those events, we just go through the timeline, 1948, 1967, 1973, victory and victory and victory and dancing in the streets and accomplishment. 1973 was a victory, but at a tremendous cost. And the cumulative effect of the wars put the state of mind of all Klal Yisrael in a very, very dark place. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked Rabbi Lau, he said, what's the mood on the street? What are people saying? How are people feeling? And Rabbi Lau shook his head and he said, it's a very, very tough time. People are depressed. People are unhappy. People are worried and people are scared. And if you walk through the streets of Tel Aviv, if you walk through the streets of Yerushalayim, people are just looking at each other and turning to strangers and saying, what's going to be? Mayiyeh, what's going to be? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe slammed his fist down and he said, Lo zu haderech. That's not the way to Yeshua, and that's not what makes Klal Yisrael great, and that's not how we achieve the miracles that we achieved. We don't ask the question out of a sense of yeyush and a sense of passivity of ma yiyeh. Yeshua comes when we ask the question ma naaseh, and not rhetorically. What are we going to do? Not the hand-wringing, head-shaking, what are we going to do? But the tachlis and practical, my yeshlach b'bayim, what do we have in the house? What's the next step? Where is Yeshua going to come from? What are we going to achieve? How are we going to achieve it? We all embrace the fact. We take comfort and solace in the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us in certain situations around this time of year. Ba'asher Husham, the message and the lessons from his treatment of Yishmael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to pay such attention about what will be, just Ba'asher Husham. But there is a lesson. Ba'asher Husham is not a get out of jail free card. Ba'asher Husham is a motto for the way we engage in Cheshbon HaNefesh. Not the thing only that I am going to be, and not a nostalgic, wistful impression of what I once was, but I take very, very close regard to Ba'asher Husham. I take the lessons of my past ambitions, I apply them to the future, and I dream about that, and I make sure that they apply Ba'asher Husham. What do I have in the house? Ma Naaseh is the anthem of tshuva. Zacharti l'chesed nu'rayach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, I remember and I know that you can dream like that. And I know you can make those dreams real. And I know you can make those dreams practical. And there is a sense sometimes when we get into all of that, the story that we began with, to make a cheshbon about a million things that may or may not happen in the future, to play it forward and to imagine, that's not a true Kabbalah ala asid. To play out 9 million scenarios and to live in the past and to say, then I was able to do it. And those were the days. That's not the type of zichronos that inform upon and that motivate the most sincere and the highest level of tshuva. There is a laser sharp focus on Ba'asher Husham. I aspire to the days of what I used to be and I believe in my heart that I can reclaim them. I know for certain I have clarity on what I might become and that informs on my decisions of today. That future starts now. It starts today, Ba'asher Husham, the way we are and in the place we are right then. That is the type of marriage and the relationship between Avar, Hove and Asid, between the Charata and even the admiration, even the good feeling that we have to the past, our recognition and appreciation of some of the things that were, our desire for the future, and a very real sense of Ba'asher Husham, of what I can do about that today. We can get lost in our tshuva through cynicism or depression. We can get lost in our sense of looking in the past and the future by getting confused about details. Just tell the person what time it is. Just show up at the Seder. Just reach out to have the conversation that you might have had once upon a time, that you know you should have, or that you believe when the timing is right and perfect, you'll have it sometime in the future. One of the more depressing analogies we sometimes use, many in the room are of the age, and will have opportunities to celebrate with Chaverim at a chasna, and there is a experience that so many of us have. We're there for the right reasons. We want to be mesameach chasen and kala. And we imagine that there's going to be a perfect time to break into the circle. and it'll be in this second, and in this second, and this second, and maybe then. But it's like a Jewish wedding version of Murphy's Law, that the moment you finally break through is the time they're going to stop the music or break into some very, very different kind of beat. And the moment has passed, and it wasn't right, and it wasn't perfect, and it's not the way it was supposed to be. We need to avoid the dangers of over-nostalgic or the precedent of some of our worst behaviors. We need to avoid the dangers of agonizing over the future and stressing over what will be, the ma'yeh, and bring and inform the best of those desires, the best of those aspirations, the best of those thoughts to the Ba'asher Husham in the here and now. Tshuva begins here. Tshuva begins now. And it reflects on Me'aretzahu Yotza Ashur. It reflects on the best of what we once were, brought to life today, and bringing us even future heights as we move forward. It is my sincere and genuine bracha to so many of my chaverim. I can't offer a bracha unless it's a birchas hedyot of hedyot to my rabbeim in the room as well. But that collectively, as a community, we should grow, we should aspire to grow to the tshuva that is most complete, the tshuva that is most real, and the tshuva that brings with us the ultimate of salvation, Yeshua and Geula, for us and all of Am Yisrael.